that's nice.
Oh, no, not that. Not one of your, your old Bakersfield cronies.
Oh, my God. It's recording. You don't have any.
Oh, shit.
Welcome to AE Double Back for January 13th, 2021. We got a tweet from listener Mike Sulko, who asked us what our entrance music would be, and it just sent us down to a weird rabbit hole. I assumed, I think correctly, that what he was asking was like, what existing entrance music, you know, would be yours? And you just pick, you know, pick one, which is a thing. But these two just started digging through the crates and like, this is the song that really inspires me. Just went off on a complete tangent, which is fine.
Look, is completely acceptable. There are no rules in this country anymore.
No,
I will not be held to some like holier than thou standard any longer.
We're breaking down all the structures, Robert. And look, when you think of something like that, there are lists for this kind of shit. It's like, it depends. The song is entirely dependent on, like, are you a heel or are you a face? Is this a gimmick? Like, do you have a specific gimmick, you know? Or is it a theme song for life itself? I don't know.
What kind of sound setup do you have? Like what? Like what? What is?
Is there
what
pyro?
Is your? What is your speaker configuration?
Okay, here's the thing. We'll get to the show AEW, the thing that we're here to talk about. But first, this is what they sent me. And so we'll play a little bit of it. We'll be talking over it because Lord knows we don't want BMI crawling down our butts trying to copyright claim our music. All the money that we're making from this podcast, we don't want them to take it from us.
Billions. Watch out.
If lawyers or some kind of like government body were listening in order to bust us, that would just, you know, that's all to our gain anyway. That ups our numbers.
Yeah, it's honestly going to double our viewership. So
I would love it if that were the case. Hey, can we just like divert some valuable resources from some other company just so to up our numbers?
I mean, surely the FBI have nothing better to do than to track down copyright violations.
Get your quarters. I
mean, this administration's FBI.
True.
Yeah.
Dang it. All right. The first song that Teresa sent to me.
How many did she send you?
Two. Now that is whittling it down from a list of like 20. So,
all right, I'm sending you some more now.
Oh, I'm not going to play them. Here's the first one. Just imagine like the lights go out. You see this entrance video start playing. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know. Flowers or maybe pearls. I would like a string of pearls that like it snapped and like all the pearls are slow motion. They're flying across the screen. And then this music starts playing. Okay, this is a nice slow build.
I think I heard a guy playing this outside my English department building in school.
Was there pyro? Did like fireworks go off around him?
He has a good build. This song pumps me up in life in general.
Yeah.
So I'm like, people might dig it.
A lot of aggression.
No
aggression whatsoever.
This is about what gets you fired up. So these are intensely personal choices, and you know they don't always have to make sense. But you just have to know that you're about to beat someone's ass in the ring immediately afterwards, and it has to work for you.
It seems like that was music aspiring to avert any fisticuffs.
It would be like a happy pumped up, you know?
All right.
Now, if it was like an angry pumped up, I definitely would have gone with something like Gojira or like, I don't know, as I mentioned before, Psychobilly Freakout by the Reverend Horn Heat. But, you know.
Solid choice.
My other choice I thought was very much more like, this is definite entrance music. Mm. Like, there's no other way to frame it. And there's no way they could pay for it either. Because it's JC's song.
Yeah,
Color,
nice.
Stop it.
How dare you interview with Mr. Z and J.
But does that sound like a big, clear entry?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's like, who's going to stop me now? You know? It's like, yeah,
and
that
also,
sounds like definite wrestler music.
Distorted vocals from Kanye after that. That's also like that's a real good sound.
And you put that video of the manatee on the screen, but instead of like booping against the glass, he busts through it, and like it explodes.
Oh, then just this killer manatees.
Another
out
woman shattering a glass ceiling.
Oh man!
Slash wall.
Wall. Yeah, that's not as impressive. Smashing the glass wall. I don't know.
I mean, sometimes it's hard to move laterally in life as well as vertically. So whatever.
I don't know if the patriarchy is stopping you from making inconsequential, time wasting moves. Then I guess that's a positive.
Let's get to Calder's choice,
okay.
Which let's bear in mind that he has been ragging on you for not being pumped up enough or aggressive enough.
Okay.
The song is No More Kings.
Yes,
no, it's
correct.
No More Kings is the band.
Yes.
Sweep the Leg is the song. And I am ready to drive a Trans Am in an early 80s action adventure series.
Yeah. This is definitely Miami Vice.
I was thinking Knight Rider / Biscuit of Science.
I think we're on the same page here. We're talking 80s.
Auto Man. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So,
oh no, was that the good part? Is that what you're saying?
You can't stop it there. How dare you?
Here's the thing. You need to tell me your time codes. Otherwise, I'm just going to pick the first 30 seconds of music. I ain't got time to edit this properly. I'm just gonna.
Yeah, who are we? Kenny Omega. His song takes a long time to kick in.
Yeah, but he's got the
dancers to make
janitors
up for it.
Yeah.
The so janitors.
And
Justin Roberts going on and on about North Carolina. It's
custodians.
Time.
The glittering janitors. That's what they can become.
But
the custodiettes.
That song like felt really like in the zeitgeist because Cobra Kai is out there now, and this was a throwback reunion like kind of piece like a good number of years ago. Like if you watch the music video, it's this kind of like long, epic-ish feeling video that includes like a number of the actors from Karate Kid, and the guy that is behind the song was an acquaintance of mine. It just is an awesome song.
This is very personal. It's your choice, and it is correct for you.
All right, give us your choice.
Okay,
this is my cheat because anytime anybody asks me my favorite entrance song, I go to here because like it's too hard to like think. Just the decades of awesome, amazing entrance music I heard. So this is the entrance music that I use when I used to backyard wrestle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
I mean, you want to talk pumped up. Like, I walked out and I was ready to throw into a flaming
shape. Sure. Great Onyx.
Onyx, and this is the Onyx Biohazard remix that is really hard to find. For the longest time, I could have sworn it was on the Judgment Night soundtrack. It's not. I could only find it like in the YouTube era when I could just search for it.
I feel like over the years, a lot of Central Valley and then Southern California record stores were like relentlessly hounded by one Robert Clark Jan demanding.
Look,
every Circuit City as it was going out of business. Where's the discount section?
I'm not saying that I made them pull out that big book in the back with for special orders, but I'm also not saying that I did not do that.
And, I used to work at a record store.
And also, like, every, like, karaoke DJ setting up, like, in local bars, like, do you have the Biohazard Onyx remix in your book?
Oh my God, if this were available on karaoke, I would be out every night, every single night.
That'd be pretty fun.
Oh my God.
I would be there to watch for sure.
Anyway, at any rate.
We could go on about this for like another 4 hours because I have a lot to say on the subject.
Listen to it on AE Double Back Dark.
Ooh.
AE Dark Back? That doesn't sound good at all. Back. I'm not going to do that.
Is that a slur?
It feels like it should be. tweet at us at AE Double Back and tell us your entrance music.
Yeah.
Just because it would be fun.
It's fun.
It's always any wrestling fan should know the answer to that because it will be asked of you at some point.
Okay. But if you're anyone like me, I completely understand if your choice is actually 30 choices, and that's perfectly acceptable.
You just want a playlist. Yeah.
Yeah, just make a Spotify playlist and tweet that at us, okay? I will listen to it.
Also, like, since in the past we were talking about how, like, a good heel, like, makes choices, such as with their hair, that irritate you, you might want to pick, like, entrance music that cuts off exactly when it's about to get good.
Well, that's another reason why I had a bunch of things on my list, because I was like, what if I have a gimmick, you know? Then Night Boat to Cairo for Madness would be good.
Sure.
Or, you know, like, yeah,
or One Night in Bangkok. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just me.
Or We're Mad by the Toy Dolls. I could keep going.
Coin-operated boy by the Dresden Dolls.
This Make Me Happy by Fontella Bass, and I know you don't know who that is, so you're going to
maybe just the Celino and Barnes radio jingle.
Attorneys at Law.
Or the Taco Bell bell. That's all I need to get pumped up.
Sure.
Just the shittiest Undertaker ripoff.
Anyways, you guys, there was a wrestling match this week.
At least a couple.
Everything else that happened today, look, last week, that was a very significant day. And coincidentally, so is this week. So, again, the quarter thing is in play. We will not be talking about what may have been significant about today other than wrestling.
Only wrestling was important today.
For our sanity, and I'm assuming for yours. So we'll just start, shall we? All right. So we've only wasted 13 minutes of your lives. That's not bad.
Sure.
Well, the first match, we've got a beautiful match. It's a fun one. I wouldn't say beautiful, but it's fun. Eddie versus Pac. And, you know, they're accompanied with, you know, Pac's got Penta and Rey Fénix, and Eddie's got the family, Butcher, the Blade Bunny, all the good stuff.
I guess it's not much of a family anymore, is it? It's just the three of them. Or four of them, I guess, technically.
Four. Yeah.
Three is a family.
Two is a family?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. Two can be a family.
Or you could be a family of one.
That's a little weird.
I'm co-opting everything from the army nowadays.
I also think, like, if one person alone can eat like a family sized portion of anything, then they are a family.
Yeah, if you can polish off a full frozen pizza, you're
a
family.
That's the qualification for family. You can eat a large pizza by yourself.
And you can file your taxes that way.
Yes.
I'm filing jointly with myself and a DiGiorno's.
It's not delivery, assholes. It's my wife. Oh my God, I'm losing my mind. Okay, so this is a really fantastic match because it's Eddie who's his expressions. It just him. He's just funny to me because he's, you know, he's not the most technically proficient in moves and technique at this point, I'm assuming, in his career. He probably was earlier in his life or something.
But nowadays he's slower.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he's slower and whatever. He doesn't do a lot of high flying things or anything like that. But he's, his face is fun to watch and his reactions are really fun to watch. Especially because everything pisses him off so much. and you've got this lovely, you know, bookend. So anytime, some of the friends of Eddie or friends of Pac try to like get their beacon and like help out, there's, you know, they're like,
I can't even describe this properly.
You know, they're keeping everyone at bay, whatever. It's
sure
typical stuff, but it was fun.
I will later on, I make a note that, Marco's stunt is very similar to Eddie Kingston to me in that I would rather hear them talk than wrestle. Mm-hmm. The difference being, of course, that I also don't want to watch Marco stunt wrestle. but Eddie, like, for all that I don't care for his in-ring work, the one thing he does do well is sell.
Yeah. And,
like, it's believable. Seriously. When he gets hit and then, you know, they do the thing where they kind of have to stand and wait around for the person to set up their move and then come running at him and whatever.
Yeah.
And like Eddie's facials are so good that you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm buying that he is actually stunned and he's trying to get his bearings. And you know,
he did this one thing with his eyes where it was like, is one of his eyes crossed? Like, couldn't tell what was going on, but it looked like he was in so much pain.
when you say Eddie's facials are really good,
no,
did
I'm
I
not
say
talking
that, or did you say that?
No, I said that.
Thank God I did not say that. I'm just
because this is a family show, so keep your filthy fucking mind out of the gutter.
Yeah, well, all of the fucking children out there, look, open your fucking prickle ears.
I could have been thinking about like a beauty salon facial, but you know, maybe were I'm you? The one with an innocent mind.
Caller, if there's one thing I know about you, that is not it. That is not it. Okay. Anyways, it was a really great match. I mean, yeah, Eddie looks like fantastic. He was in so much pain.
Yeah.
Packed up this fucking ridiculous flip. I was like, is like a quadruple flip even necessary? No. Is it possible? Well, if it is, yeah, use it.
Hell yeah.
He did. It was fucking amazing.
Oh man. yeah, there was an awful lot of good stuff. I was thinking about the pacing of this match and how like it was a lot of the time it did feel like it was slow-ish, but then I was thinking, you know, like that can be good. Like there was a lot of it that felt that way where it was like kind of a good slow.
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to shit on Eddie anymore because I did enjoy the match. So there you go.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It was a thumbs up for me too. There was even a moment at the end where Lance Archer comes in just to sort of make sure that the Butcher, the Blade, Bunny, and Eddie, they all leave. Mm. And that there's a little moment between Lance and Pac. So that'll eventually be something, but it's not anything right now. But
not yet.
Just to let us know they're still not friends.
But around this moment, like speaking of a good slow, very, very smart of Jake the Snake to take the steps nice and easy coming down towards the ring. You don't want any accidents to happen there.
No. I mean, I honestly, it's like watching my dad and I'm like, whoa, slow down. Like, you're gonna fucking fall and die. Don't do that. They're fragile.
Yeah. Between the old men and the very tiny men in this show, there was a lot of, you be careful now.
Yeah. Is that three ups?
I believe so.
Sweet. So that's a good start to the night. Then we've got the promised match between Chuck Taylor versus Miro. Chuck Taylor is accompanied by Orange Cassidy, Miro by Kip Sabian. This is the match that will determine whether or not Chuck is Miro's young lion, a.k.a. Butler. And it was a fast match.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Chuck is a fine wrestler, but like is nothing special. And we want to put over Miro. Oh, Jesus. You keep making me do this. After all this time, I'm finally breaking down. You want to put over Miro as a monster. So, like, yeah, great.
Yeah, that's right. This was a match where Chuck Taylor possibly being Miro's butler is at stake. Also, Elaine has trouble with Mr. Pitt at the office.
Yeah. What?
Wait, what?
It's a Seinfeld episode. Was that like on a like Chiron on your screen?
It's on my head Chiron.
Before I forget, I'm just going to jump right ahead to near the end of the show and say that for some reason in the ring, Serena Deeb reminds me of Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I don't know why. There's something about her face. That. And every once in a while, I'm just like, Elaine? Why? No. Okay. Whatever. Sorry. That was neither here nor there.
None of this has been on topic so far, so it doesn't matter. So, yeah, we've got a good match, decent match. It does what you want it to do. You want Miro to win. You want to see what happens next. You knew it was going to happen. It's fast. And, yeah, no. Chuck Taylor is now the butler for Miro. We're going to find out next week what that means.
We're going to get
thumbs up.
1 month of Chuck Taylor being Miro's butler.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it. It makes sense, especially given that he's not going to be able to tag all that time. Like, give him an interesting angle. And they could do something interesting with it, but I do not have high hopes. Just this match, I ended up giving a middle. The future of this whole thing, I'm very wary. I'm expecting to just be a flood of downward turning thumbs from me. But okay. We'll see. We'll see.
Mine will probably be up, but that's okay, because mine's up right now.
Okay.
I have high hopes.
Just think about all of the hollow arcade machines that Chuck Taylor is going to have to be cleaning.
So many.
Where are you at on this one with your thumb?
Well, I middled it. Like, there was good, but, like, there were a couple things that I was especially interested in. One is that something I was thinking about is that I always think it's a good thing when you get, like, Miro really behaving like a monster man that Indiana Jones has to fight. And also, I'm really interested in how heavily they were emphasizing Chuck Taylor as the Kentucky gentleman. I can envision a universe in which they push that to the hilt and he's eventually wearing like a white linen suit and sipping bourbon and like, you know, talking in this genteel voice about how hot it is.
I'm assuming that that's what he used to do on the indies and no longer does now. That may not be the case, but either way, I bleh. Blah, 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 blah.
All right. Well, we'll move on from there then. So we've got Matt Hardy and the Private Party in an interview backstage. Matt's like, I speak first. So he's really like taking this heel manager thing to the next level. And they're mad at him. They call him a money-grabbing carny, which I thought was funny.
Hurtful.
In the world of pro wrestling, that's really saying something. If someone...
I mean, that's a compliment in the world of wrestling.
What is wrestling if it is not carnival barkers in a ring?
I mean, you know? If somebody is like is that in a bad way in pro wrestling, then that is severe.
But then Matt Hardy says, well, it's time, you know, you need to grow up. You know, that's on you, blah, blah, blah. He's like, you know what? It's time you learn something that I learned September 5th, 2020 at All Out. Nobody cares. Now, here's what's interesting, right? That was only like a few months ago. So it's not like he learned that lesson. I mean, he's so much older than these guys, right? So they're really not trailing that far behind him in the lessons part of life, according to Matt Hardy.
I learned it a lot quicker. I mean, that seems to me that's already the 30%.
He's like, I'm not I'm not going to let you live another 30 years to figure this out. I'm going to make you learn immediately.
I wish he would.
Because I just learned a few months ago.
I wish he would have said, it's time you learned something that I learned on September 11th. USA. USA.
Wow, that took a turn.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say September 11th, 2019. That would be at least a little, I don't know.
Nope. Definitely talking about the terrorist attacks in New York City.
I know, but September 11th, 2001. It's a different feeling than it was 2001. You know what I mean? Like, that was a very different feeling.
You know what I'm going to say, Calder? You don't have to throw a quarter in, but you have to throw a nickel in.
Boy.
You got to throw a nickel in that jar because that's. I mean,
right, I'll throw one in too. No,
not a current event, but you know, even still, never forget.
Wow, that's that's the percentage that 9/11 has depreciated by. That's
I don't know where it started, but that's where it's at.
It's definitely
currently.
There now.
You gotta pay attention to the global index.
I watch the market that every day.
Oh my God.
It used to be a Franklin Mint commemorative coin, so it's really down.
Well, I'll tell you something that I was curious about in this segment, actually. And Chan, like, you must have noticed this, that Matt Hardy declared that what he's running is the Matt Hardy brand. And I was questioning, is that in fact – like an attempt to like poke in the eye of Robert Stone on NXT.
Not specifically him, but all of this, the business of the fans don't care. I learned that because I was a face and they spurned me. That's all very old school. This whole thing of, being a manager like that and like, you don't talk, I talk, and you know, like all of this business, this is all very like deliberately throwback old school stuff.
Well, I mean, that's definitely kind all of, like a general like throwback vibe like that I get is like for sure like one more like throwback thing that AEW definitely loves to do. But I don't know, the specificity of saying brand and Matt Hardy being like a slick Robert Stone-esque like guy at the same time just made me wonder.
It could be, but I think Hardy had been gone for a while, hadn't he, by that time?
Yeah, but since Robert Stone was like alleged by some to be a parody of Tony Khan, that's, I don't know, just interesting.
Oh wow, I didn't even.
Like people like talked about that maybe being true. That's, you know, one of those things. Like there's always a fog of rumors and half truths. So who knows? But that was what I was thinking about during the segment.
Yeah, could well be.
I liked it. I gave it a thumbs up. It is definitely, it took his character up another notch. We're seeing why he's coming from the place he's coming from, like why, you know, just like straight up says, you know, it's because of All Out. So it'll keep developing, of course, but I gave it a thumbs up.
I middled it just because it's weird to me that they're pulling the trigger so quickly on him turning heel. In AEW, I'm now used to them letting these things evolve naturally and organically, and it's taken a long time. You know, we'll play out a storyline over a year or 2 years, and to just sort of like hard turn all of a sudden, now I'm a nasty mean heel. Kind of, it's not bad. It just kind of didn't feel great for me. So
I feel like it's because he's going to turn back quickly.
No, that could be. I mean, if he starts flipping personalities
It's Broken Matt Hardy. You can't control
I'm all
that.
About it. I'm all about it.
I would like it. Like, it would amuse me if the spectrum that includes, like, such fantastical creation suddenly also included, like, a rather prosaic, like, sleazy manager, like, in the mix.
No, I want to see just, like, a hardworking nose to the grindstone, like, entertainment lawyer persona as well. Just popping over there, and all of a sudden it's like, ah, oh, man, I just got to go over these contracts, you know? Like, I learned my lesson back on September 11th, you know? Like, when everybody was dying, I was learning of contracts.
But no, if there's one thing we know for sure, it's that 9/11 changed everything about entertainment contract law.
So true.
All right. Did we all thumbs this?
I did not thumb it yet. I also thumbed it up because I think there was, like, the turn might have been abrupt, and I didn't initially love it because I loved what he was doing before so much, but I am liking it now.
There we go. And then we have the Inner Circle, a little segment with Inner Circle. Just a heads up, there's a new merch site called painmaker.store. It's got some cool stuff on there. It's Champion the Brand and Chris Jericho, a.k.a. Les Champion. Champion, whatever.
Did you say Les Champion?
Les Champion.
Wow.
Whatever. I'm not French, so, you know, eat my asshole.
Wow.
Hey, kids.
Pardon your French.
That one was for you. I'm kidding. So basically, the Inner Circle's out there to talk about their New Year's Eve resolutions. And Hager, his resolution is more championships. Yeah. Which then gets echoed by other members.
That was, and this was like a great, like first big note to the whole segment. Like, I was instantly on board, because in this cynical world, to ever hear like an earnest exclamation like of something like that, I was just like, you know what? Good for you, Jake. Good for you.
There's a moment where Santino talks about making his grandma sofritos or whatever, and the crowd was going boo. And MJF's like, you're booing food?
That was one of my favorite lines of the night. So arroz con gandules. I had to look it up because like I know what arroz is, but what is gandules? Mm-hmm. It's rice and pigeon peas. So I'm down with that. Sofrito, I'm all about that.
I think that like and MJF coming to the defense of food, incidentally, came almost directly on the heels of him saying that in the new year, fat people gotta go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jericho said that he and MJF will win the tag team belts, which then caused a big commotion amongst them. So now they're going to have a three-way match, I believe, next week to see who will be the tag team from the Inner Circle. Because I guess there has to be an official tag team from that group. Yeah. They're just a bunch of jealous dudes.
Yeah. Well, and incidentally, also here, like Jericho, the magician of names and merch, comes up with another gem. Well, one comes up over him. Tag team slut.
Oh, boy. I did not like hearing Sammy saying that. It's definitely not the guy you'd want to go to for
It was an interesting like testing of the waters, because like that was the first time in months that they like that anyone said the words like sex gods.
Honestly, I feel like it's a deliberate tweak to people like us who are like, oh, how dare he, which is, you know, fair enough. I don't care for it, but also I'm not going to, you know, freak out about it. So,
well, anyway, he's been on the back burner for a long time. Like, I kind of forget all about him, which I think was their goal, sort of.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's worked. I've forgotten, for the most part, most things about him, except for there's some that irks me and I can't quite put my finger on it.
I'd like to have
But anyways, I gave the segment Oh, go ahead.
I'd like to have a week-to-week Teresa Q rating, like, rundown of, like, what AEW personalities, like, register higher or lower, so that we can always know where, the chairman, Sean Spears is, or whoever.
You mean what's his face?
Uh-oh.
Thumbs up. What's his face? I gave it a thumbs up.
Real quick, is the lyric to that song Abercrombie?
No, but now that you said it, I can't not hear it.
Oh, man.
I kept trying to, because obviously I could just look up the lyrics.
I'm becoming Judas in my mind.
Did not know you were.
I become.
Yeah.
So you thought this whole time it was an Abercrombie and Fitch.
Here's the thing.
Crossover promotion.
I've never worried about the lyrics. I've just watched the people sing and go like, well, they look like they're having fun. And I know Judas in my mind. Everything else, like, I don't even worry about it. But today I was like, what? This sounds so weird. What is it? You know what? I'm going to try and figure it out. So I listened to it.
Didn't try hard enough.
That's what my brain said. So I just thought I'd pass it along to you just to confirm. And indeed, it is not Abercrombie and Fitch. So.
No. Sorry, I've got a frog in my throat.
And that frog knows the lyrics to Judas better than Chan, I suspect.
You know what? French people love Chris Jericho.
Nope. Well, he is French-Canadian, like, so I don't know if that...
True. True enough. I'm assuming that you liked this call.
Oh, I love this segment. This was a great segment, and I enjoyed that... They came up with something not entirely original exactly, but certainly like something like interesting, like to settle this, their differences in this one. I like the idea of an intra team like tag like event. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Did we all thumb it?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then we've got the Dark Order interview backstage, and they're asking Evil Uno, what's next? And he's like, well, you know, obviously going forward, everything's going to be in the name of, you know, the Exalted One or whatever. But then they grabbed Adam Page, and he's like, he's going to be in our match next week. And then Silver, oh, my God, Silver's so funny. I can't even take it.
Oh, my Lord.
I mean, I can't like this enough.
I love you so much, Adam.
His joy.
And apparently next week, Adam will decide whether or not he officially joins the team, which I would assume he's going to.
I would assume that he's not. But honestly, I haven't put a lot of thought into it because either way, it will be enjoyable. The storyline won't just end. There will still be, you know, more foolishness, and I'm for all of it.
Yeah, I thumbsed it up.
Me as well. And I think it's interesting to see, like, the fun Dark Order vibe, like, that is in segments like this, because sometimes they're an all-consuming cult that uses up the peons and you know, like, does underhanded things to get to win against the good guys. And sometimes they're like, you know, they have sweater parties. they do sing-alongs. Yeah. They have a good time. You know, sometimes you lose and you get chewed out. Sometimes you get a gift just because, I don't know, it's... Like, that's nice.
Sometimes there's riding lawnmowers, and who doesn't love a riding lawnmower?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
even if you don't have a yard.
That's still transportation.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You could mow some highway embankments on your way home, because you can't drive it on a highway.
I've ridden one. It's a good time.
Travesty.
Yeah, okay, so we all thumbs it up.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
It was followed by a Geico commercial where they said, Scoops. There it is.
I do hope.
And wow, we're really drilling down into this.
I really hope Scoops, we're stopping this.
There it is. Scoops, there it is. God, I was laughing so
Scoops,
hard.
Scoops, there it is.
Did yeah, I miss the guys were going, Scoops, there it is. You know that, what was it? Not Rex and Effects, but what was the team that was the
tag team. Literally tag team.
Yeah, they were all tag team.
Well, there okay. it is.
Anyway.
And I just want to let the Geico company know that I would really enjoy being a representative in a nationally televised commercial of theirs.
You know, if they're looking, I'm free for the next 20 years if you need a face for the company.
You know, Geico has a great product and they're good people.
Hey, way to brown nose. All right.
Like a good neighbor, Geico is there.
Wrong one.
I feel like that sounds right. So I'm just going to go with it.
Then we've got an awesome segment with Taz and Darby. Basically, it's showing the progression of where we're going to see the match later tonight. But basically, it's just recapping what's like Taz trying to mentor Darby and Darby not having it. And then Taz brings in Brian Cage and then Ricky Starks. And then, you know, now it's like an all out personal feud against Darby Allin due to Taz's hurt feelings is how they made it sound.
Yeah.
You know
I get
what I mean?
That.
I think that's the
I gave it a thumbs up because it's always fun to see where we started and where we're at.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, this is a fine recap package.
Yeah, I mean, if we're thumbing it at all, like it's an up, and I think it's another great example of some of the different kind of speeds that these the AEW packages can come in, because they definitely can do big and loud and crazy, but like those all are so much more powerful for that they like will do like measured like you know like calmer ones that have more of that sports feel that you sometimes hear about promotions going for. And Taz is always like really good at those.
Yeah. Then we have an anticipated match. We're backstage with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, and they're ready to go out on stage. And Omega's like, hey, you want to do the Elite entrance? And Callis is like, no, they deserve their own entrance. We'll go out first. And I was like, why would they go out first when Omega's got the belt? But okay. I mean, I guess they all have belts, but whatever. So you're expecting the Young Bucks to come out second since they're supposed to be in the match. But instead, Callis does this long intro, but introduces Gallows and Anderson instead. So then we've got Gallows and Anderson and Omega versus Varsity Blondes and Danny Limelight. It was weird.
Yep. Really? How so?
I just thought, I mean, it was, I was surprised. I don't know.
Sure.
I was surprised. That I just was the thought point. It was. Yeah. I just thought it was weird because I thought they were getting the band back together. And so I was like, this is going to throw a wrench in that. So we might not see that. I love
it's another way for Omega to heal it up. I thought it was just like, like a real jerky kind of swerve. Made all the worse by the fact that they had Tony Khan on camera. Mm-hmm. And hey, love the guy. Not a good on-screen presence.
Well, I think it depends. Something that I think is very true is that literally every person has a good performance in them if it is measured out in the right way. And for some people that is pretty small, but everyone can look good. Everyone can look good. And you know he's no exception. Like the AEW Dynamite commercials that were running over on Impact that were a deliberately low tech, low rent style. He's really fun in them. But you know you draw him out over more than an amount of seconds, I guess this was actually shorter than that, so that might put the lie to what I'm talking about. But I the fact remains that I think he can be viable, but, you know.
Yeah, obviously. Everybody can be in this. He was not.
Anyway, yeah. So this is a really interesting match. It was I mean, I'm not that into the Varsity Blondes, you know, so I wasn't like super intrigued. It also was kind of weird to see Gallows without makeup, to be quite honest.
their whole like current vibe is so different now. Like somehow, and it's a reminder to me of how fully the shows are able to shape your perception of someone, not just as in character, but your mental image of what they look like and what their proportions are. Like,
oh, yeah.
Is so much about what they want it to be for you. Like, so that you're like, oh, that guy is monstrously huge. And at some point you realize
he just had those massive shoes all the time.
He's like, he's 5'9" and a half. Not bad, you know?
I mean, yeah.
But they kept putting him next to people who are 5'4" or, you know, doing, I don't know. But so, like, I definitely feel this, like, utterly differentness to those guys now compared to their AJ Styles look.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely had a polished look when they're part of the group with AJ Styles. But they're not really official yet. So they don't have like a thing yet at AEW. So I'm sure that will change over time.
Well, I don't think they're going to be, I'm sure that like it'll be like a temporary thing. Like when they conclude like this really active partnership with Impact, I'm sure they're going to return to just being full-time Impact guys.
I see.
At least that's my assumption. To my knowledge, they don't have a deal like expiring like I think Don Callis does.
I see. Now this I kind of want to put into two different sections. Do you guys agree? Because there's the match and then there's the after the match. Or no?
It's not that much. Keep it all in. Keep it all in.
All right. Well, that really muddles things for me. Because I have two different thumbs for it. We'll see.
You know what? We'll split it. Split it. That's fine. I'm going to give... oh boy, now I have to recalibrate what I'm going to say.
Exactly, right? It really changes things.
All right. I'm going to middle this then.
Yeah, I middled the match. I middled the match.
I think I was like more upbeat in general. I upped the match.
Okay.
So
after the match, Moxley comes out and goes after Omega. Then Penta and Ray come out. I mean, everyone in the locker room comes out. Moxley's in the ring with the Young Bucks. And then Penta and Phoenix kick the Young Bucks in the face. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just this all-out melee. And during it, Omega leaves with Callis, which was a great heel move. Mm-hmm. It's just now something we come to expect from Omega, but it's also... it's just really funny. It was just funny, I thought. I thumbs up this part.
I did.
I realize now that I could have kept it together because I also middled this section.
Oh.
I thought it was fine. The DDT that Moxley gave to the guy that came into the ring to break the thing up was vicious. And I was like, oh, right. The DDT used to be a finishing move.
Yeah.
It used to be a devastating move. And now... people just toss it off and it is whatever, but that looked really hurtful and I want to see more of that.
I mean, saying the things that JR has been saying for months now.
Oh yeah. Sounding like an old man. That is out of nowhere.
That's different.
Out of nowhere for the past 30 years.
oh man, this is
this was a great aftermath melee, and Dynamite does these well. And it's no easy thing to do because there are a lot of moving parts, and it is desperately straining to like lose coherence and lose control as a general piece that shows do. And I feel invariably like with AEW, there is a structure and there is a logic that is connecting and differentiating the different kind of little moments in the whole, so that people don't seem to randomly like run out of the locker room like without connection to one another, and it doesn't feel as if the melee fails to change in its feeling from one to the next. Each one of those like clusters of people seems to affect what it becomes, and it starts in one place and it ends someplace else, and it's just they do that well. That's all.
Yeah. Then we have something I was not looking forward to. Britt Baker talk show. Oh, and her Gucci belt and her bad jokes. She's got Cody Rhodes on, and she says, no fake friends, just fake teeth. And I thought that was funny because it does look like he has fake teeth. And I would imagine in his life, he's probably gotten them knocked out a few times, given, you know, his love of doing weird, dangerous shit.
So, like, Cody, don't blade your teeth. It doesn't get you anything.
Don't blade your teeth. Dude, gums don't grow back. Jade Cargill was a surprise guest, which none of us wanted to see.
I did get something out of this one.
I'm speaking for me and my kingdom.
Okay.
But
you and Mushu didn't want to see it, is what you're saying.
She and I really did not.
Oh boy.
And Mushu is quite the judge of wrestling. Well,
tragically, cats can't thumb.
No, she can't thumb at all. But
unless she's polydactyl? Is she polydactyl?
She's not. She's regular.
Sorry.
But never her mind. Back feet are like always, she's always on her tiptoes. I don't know why.
To be quiet.
Is she tiptoes? Her front feet seem to have no problem. Anyway, so Jade, she said, I'm tired of waiting. Where's my opponent? And, you know, if there's anything we've learned, Tony Khan apparently is the one that sets the shit up. So you're talking to the wrong people. Because this happens almost like immediately afterwards. Tony Khan does set up a match for Britt Baker without her knowledge. So, you know, if you want one and you don't want to deal with a certain person, just go to Tony. He has no problem setting it up. But anyway, so Red Velvet comes out because Jade is talking shit about Brandy. They start slapping each other, and there's a full-on fight. And then all the women from AEW come out and break it up.
Yo, did you know that there were this many female wrestlers in AEW?
No.
Because I did not know.
And that is my fucking point, right? That is my fucking point always.
I think I mean, I knew that there were that many women that were a part of AEW, but I don't. It's not like there aren't that many that would mean something on Dynamite, which is certainly a problem. But yeah, like if you count up all the women's matches on Dark, yeah, there probably are dozens.
Yeah, they need to be more visible. But anyways, they were there. Cool. There's a video that pops up of Britt messing with Thunder Rosa, and then it's a Thunder Rosa promo, and basically she's like, yeah, I'm going to fuck you up because we've got a match now at Beach Break. And she's like, no, we're not. No, we're not. No way. Britt's like, nuh-uh. Tony said I wouldn't have to. And then the graphic comes up that it was already made. And she's like, no!
This was like that was great. And the only thing I would have liked better would have been if they played it out like one or two more beats that like Britt Baker continues to like say, no, it can't be. It's not it's not happening. And then you like zoom in on the graphic and more details keep like adding in.
Wait, and I'm also married and have four children. No! I died 2 years ago.
No! that would be a storyline I'd like to see.
Oh, ghost girl. The ghost dentist. She'll haunt your teeth.
Oh, no. Now I like Britt Baker, and so I'm just naturally better disposed. I haven't been so far enamored with Jade Cargill, and I still am kind of not, I guess. Although it was the first time, like speaking of like size perception, I was like, oh shit, she's very tall.
Yeah,
she looks like a wrestler.
Fucking A, man. She looks like an action figure.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't even look like a just a regular wrestler or a person that does regular things in life. She looks like an action figure that was put into a mold, like veins and all.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
It's a little bit like the first time you see Pamela Anderson like in real life.
Like you see her on well, I mean, no, how I just many mean, times like, have you been like having coffee with Pammy Lee, huh?
First, weird that she still used her married name.
And Pammy.
That's what her friends call her, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right, Chan?
But I just mean like when you see her on Baywatch or a movie or something like that, she looks like this amazing statuesque, you know, blonde, big breasts, big hips, and like all of the things that are conventionally attractive. But because it's in a movie, you're like, well, yeah, because, you know, makeup and whatnot like that. And then the way they shoot it. And all, but then you see her like I didn't even mean in real life. I meant just like it was on a talk show or something like that. And just seeing like the proportions of her body, I was like, oh, that's like not natural or not, no, not like, but I mean like the way her body's constructed was like, oh, that's like this weird, like this is, how we perceive, an ideal woman, but kind of like a Barbie, like an actual Barbie doll. You're like, when you look at her, it's like, oh, that's not right. But right. I don't know. In the same way, when I saw Jade Cargill, I was like, whoa. Because who Jade?
No, or Pamela Anderson.
Pamela.
Oh, Jade is huge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my goodness. She looks like a statue.
That I thought was like regular sized person.
She is regular sized.
Next to Jade, I'm like, I can't tell who's regular in this situation. I hear Jade's enormous and Red Velvet is teeny tiny. Or, I mean, where's the middle ground here? Because Cody was shorter than Jade also, you know?
It was striking. And for me, this was the first time I felt a particular investment in whether or not Jade Cargill works out. Because I was like, she has attributes that would be insane if that gets coupled with, like, good in-ring work. And good talking, or even just one of the two. So I'm like, they haven't necessarily served her well because she didn't come in as like a VIP grab, and they didn't really set her up as a VIP grab, but she has come in behaving like one, and consequently kind of, I don't know. Like altogether, it's not a satisfying situation, and the whole storyline still, I'm like, I don't know where we are, but now I want to be somewhere.
The reality is, too, I do want to see her fight. I do. Like, I want her to succeed as much as I want any of the women at AEW to succeed. I'm not happy necessarily with her, you know, the way she delivers her lines and stuff, although it has been getting better. This wasn't great, but it was better. But I do want to see her. Happening here? What?
I'm sorry. I just looked up heights. Jade Cargill, 5'10". So, you know,
are you
tall-ish.
Fucking kidding?
Pretty good.
But not like, you know.
So Velvet is teeny.
Red Velvet, 5'9".
What?
No. That's not right.
She must have been wearing some crazy lifts today. I don't know. We ever saw her feet, so it's hard to say. But like, yeah.
I guess Jade was wearing crazy lifts because she was taller than Cody. Like way taller. Anyways, maybe it's just my brain right now is distorting everything I already saw. You know how that works.
The truth needs to be unearthed here.
So I wasn't super stoked on this entire thing when it started, but I really loved Thunder Rosa at the end, and I did like seeing like the fullness of the women, even if they only came out to stop a fight, which is really annoyed me in the past. But it's like, whatever, if they get a bump in pay because they got to run in this one segment, I guess that's cool. So I was hard pressed on if I was going to thumb it up or middle it, but I'm going to middle it.
Yeah. Normally I put whether thumbs up, thumbs down or whatever, immediately afterwards. So at least it's sort of fresh in my head. Yeah. I wrote in all caps, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I was really thrown because it felt almost like there was an editing mistake in there. Cause all of a sudden they started playing that video and I was like, what, why are we doing this? There was no,
I wrote down the same exact thing. It truly felt like there was some kind of a production error, like maybe even a couple of them, the way that these few moments flowed together.
Yeah. And so the whole thing just came off confusing. Like, this segment, they've been doing it on a dark for a while, and I watched some and they were fine, but you know, they felt a little WWE like, and that like they were scripted and a little
stiff.
I thought it was a little bit better than WWE because like Dynamite ponied up to give her like something like a complete set.
It was a thing they used to do back in the day, Piper's Pit being the greatest example. And the thing is, Baker is going to be able to pull these off really smoothly and, you know, really engagingly in some future time, which is not quite now. She was okay, but like there was so much time given to the segment and I did not want that much time.
It wasn't good until other things were happening. And even at that, I didn't necessarily enjoy it. It was really the ending that was good, which was mostly Thunder Rosa.
Yeah. Props to Reba's awful laugh. Whatever she was doing on the couch was terrible and I hated it, which means I loved it because that's what they want. Jade Cargill, boy, she looks impressive and I hope she can back it up in the ring because her mic skills are dog shit and I don't want to hear her talk. The Thunder Rose was great. So I don't know. I still don't. You know what? I guess I have to middle it as well because Thunder Rosa really was worth it.
Totally.
And the rest of it just almost dragged it down to a thumbs down. Almost.
Yeah, I middled it as well.
Hey, you guys.
Wow. We do not usually meet in the middle like that.
And as a country, also true.
Get your quarter out.
Yeah. Wow. you put that right on the edge there of that jar. And you just think about what you said.
That thing can go in with a whisper at this point. All right. Then we've got Jungle Boy, Marco Stunt versus
with his new music. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We've got, FTR doing their thing. They're messing with Marco for too long, and then the tables turn for a while, and you think maybe Jungle Boy is going to win.
Oh, yeah, the classic Jungle Boy move.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's never a match where you think where you're certain that Jungle Boy is not going to win, because he's really, really good at playing that underdog role.
Yeah, man. And Marco Stunt is good at taking some brutal shit, man.
I think the only reason he might be able to do that is he might be too small to have bones in him.
Are you saying his bones are just cartilage? therefore, there's more bent.
I just, I think in order to be a vertebrae, you got to get just a little bit taller than that in order to need the bones to hold everything up. And God,
his fontanelle never.
God
closed.
Bless him. He doesn't need bones. You know what this makes me think of is doing baseball simulations. There are games where you're not really playing the game. You're kind of forming teams and running the numbers. And you can do things in a realistic fashion, or you can start meddling. You can start doing things unreally. You can just have the same pitcher pitch day after day after day. Uh-huh. And he eventually gets hurt, right? And you're like, that would never happen. That's a total distortion of reality. So this configuration of Jurassic Express feels like that to me. Like there is a cruel God above that is what if this team that depends heavily on the might of Luchasaurus was reconfigured, in which that might is now the might of Jungle Boy, and the Jungle Boy is Marco. And you're like, well, what would that be like? Only a cruel God might want to find out.
Well, that's the one we have, because that was the match we had. I middled it. I thought the match was fine. It was interesting, because it was different. And God, I really could see the odd versatility of Marco Stunt. And I don't really know how to frame that, because it's like he's a good asset to the team, but in a way that's weird, because he can do these. He can take a lot of punishment. He can be thrown around, and his body seems to be okay with it. And that's like you were saying, it's not typical. That's not feasible. That's not something you can continue for match after match after match. But, maybe in a pinch, using him in that way, as they tend to anyways, is interesting and fun. I don't know.
I'll tell you this. Marco Stunt is fine. All of the things that you're saying are things that – and the things that Marco Stunt does, Little Spike Dudley used to do 10 times harder and more amazing. I don't know if there's a good compilation of clips of him, but he was also a real small guy in ECW and then later on WWE and TNA, I think, and that was his thing. Is he was real tiny, and he was, he was a scrapper, and he just got obliterated. He got thrown through so many tables. He got destroyed in the most terrifying spots, and that it just made you want to root for him more. Which is how I know that Marco's not quite ready yet, because I don't root for him. Like, he gets destroyed, I'm like, I don't care. Sorry, man.
Well, I'll tell you a skill that he has that I could see more of. This was something that was a fun part of some of the dark waiting room segments, is I think multiple times they did a musical guest segment, and the musical guest was Marco Stunt on guitar. And sure enough, he came out and he played a song, and I was like, oh, He has this little angelic voice, and he's a very able musician. And normally in wrestling, whenever you have some kind of an asset, even if it's not directly applicable, they'll tend to find a way of using it if they like it enough, and they want an excuse to have you around to do whatever. So like maybe Marco is the Elias of AEW.
Yeah.
There you go.
Where did you guys thumb this? I'm in the middle.
I upped it.
Yeah, I did thumb it up because FTR is doing good stuff and Jungle Boy is always on point. So, you know, that's 3/4 of the match. That's real solid.
It really was. It was decent. I just, I don't know. I don't know why. I'm just going to stick with it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You go with your heart.
I will say one last thing, and that is that I enjoy very much that Marco has a move called the sliced bread.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a move originated, I believe, by Brian Kendrick.
Ooh.
And a fun fact, when I used to E-Fed back in the early 2000s, late 90s. That
was Britney Spears' old husband.
K-Fed is the cousin of E-Fedding.
E-Fed, you mean like Ephedra? Like you were on speed?
You mean like ETC, Edfedra?
Yeah, it was back when we would role play as professional wrestlers on a bulletin board, and it was the nerdiest bullshit ever.
Sounds very dynamic.
Hey guys, do you remember the internet, how it started? There's something called a bulletin board.
Yeah.
There was what social media was.
I definitely
back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
I definitely Andy Costello, who you know, Chan, and I when we were relatively young, were on on AOL in chat rooms, and there was a kind of D&D tavern themed role playing chat room. You know, he was a part of, and he and his friends did fairly seriously, and I would kind of come in not having taken in any of that particular tradition or seriousness, and I would be me.
This all checks out.
So who am I to cast judgment?
What I was saying is that I created that move in virtual space before it actually became a physical thing that I was very proud of. So
the E-Fed.
Yeah. SCCW, Sin City Championship Wrestling.
Ooh. Shout out.
So the next match was really great. It was Ty Conti versus Serena Deeb.
Yeah.
Lots of great technique.
Oh man.
It was a really fantastic match. I don't even know what to say about it.
We could talk about which episode of Seinfeld this reminded you of.
Yeah, let's get into it.
It reminded you of one of the ones where Elaine has to work with, what's that guy? what did you say earlier, Calder?
Mr. Pitt.
That's it.
Hilarious Mr. Pitt. Serena Deeb is just great.
Honestly, the way that she was able to flip some of these moves around, I mean, it's really fascinating. It's like, oh shit, that's some of the stuff the guys are doing. It's moves that two people are practicing together. But the stuff that the women are doing sometimes, it really looks like, oh, you have no idea I was going to do that. I just physically forced you to do this. Like, wrestling in the Olympics or something. You know what I mean?
It's a chain wrestling is not a thing you see very much, but it is a style of professional wrestling that pops up every once in a while. And it's always really exciting to see because, it's almost like a chess match.
You send a move in the mail to somebody and they have to send that move to several people or else they get a curse.
We'll have bad luck for seven years. Yeah.
Well, I thumbs it up.
Big thumbs up for me.
I really enjoyed it. I think Ty Conti does have some really interesting things that I hope she'll be incorporating down the road. Like there was this arm throw thing she did during the commercial break. And I was like, oh, that looks like some of the stuff that, what is it? Why can I not? Ronda Rousey was doing. Was like some judo stuff. That
which would make sense.
Yeah, yeah, naturally.
Yeah. Yeah, because she's a black belt
or something.
Yeah.
she's really good, and being able to incorporate that kind of stuff is fantastic. Her like physicality isn't quite there yet, mm-hmm. and I think Serena really was a great match for her because she kind of was able to cover up a lot of that stuff,
yeah.
and make it all look a lot smoother. And so yeah, I'm really looking forward to her going forward.
I was trying to decide like where I thought the blue belt ranked, because I was like, that's a discipline where I grasped the belt structure less well, and like you could tell me anything was a great you know, like if the Krav Maga tan belt, like, oh shit, yeah, that's a good one, I bet.
Our next and final match. Cage versus Darby Allin. Taz is on mic. Starks is hanging out.
All the pieces are in place.
Oh, man.
It's all there it's for all, you. It's everything you know it's going to be. Cage. I mean,
right from the get-go, Taz on the announce table saying, look at that record. But, you know, like as in look how many wins and losses he has. But because of his accent, it comes out like, look at that record. Look at that record. And I spelled it R-E-K-K-I-D because that's exactly what it sounds
you,
like.
You know, some-
that's like, have you seen Under the Cherry Moon, the movie?
No.
Prince Mm-mm. movie.
No.
Okay, everybody needs to spend the weekend
Under the Cherry
watching every
moon.
Prince movie, which there's three different movies.
Oh, my God. Prince movies.
But Under the Cherry Moon, he's like Recasto. And she's like, what? And he's like, he writes it out and she goes, you know, she reads it and she's like, Rekka Stowe. Because of the way it's spelled, she's like, Rekka Stowe. And he's like, it's Rekka Stowe.
Like, anyway, did whatever. You guys like have like a similar experience to this thing of, so my mother is from like Connecticut, from like proper New England, Connecticut. And she's from from a family of French Canadian origin. Like they were from New England, but their roots trace up to French Canada.
I trust your blue blood.
But so as a consequence, growing up, like there are names and words that I do not know for sure how that would have been spelled, because I only know it the way my mother pronounced it. And I'm unable to say what letters are in there because of the many that get skipped in the accent of my mother's family. You know, like there is no trust to be had. So
I want an example.
Well, there was this guy that used to fix my mother's like old black and white Mac, like many years ago. And his name, as my mother said it was Bob Augenbright. What's in Augenbright? I don't know.
So you're questioning his last name?
Yeah. I couldn't tell. I couldn't even guess how to spell that. But that's something I appreciate about somebody like Taz or some of the other people that are on Dynamite, because there's a rich panoply of voices and accents that is invariably delightful.
This match was great. Can't say enough positive things about it. It was bloody, of course, because of Darby. And of course, because Cage is like throwing him like he's a fucking soccer ball.
Out of the ring, yeah. Onto a table 10 feet away.
My God.
Terrifying.
Everything breaks.
And,
you know, it's like ridiculous. I mean, he's just throwing him around like a freaking soccer ball. And
worth noting that the seemingly pointless weigh-in
did in fact yield the answer that Darby is 100 pounds lighter than the machine Brian Cage, which is, you know, I think Teresa, I think you might have even said 100. I don't remember what you said.
Yeah, because when you listen to what they said at the weigh-in, it was 100 pounds difference.
Well, then you listened and I was
it's okay if you skipped over it because it's like not a big deal because who cares. But it was notable.
Yeah. Darby is the Marco stunt in this context. It's probably a very comparable like weight differential.
This is the ideal match for both of them because Darby gets to take sick bumps. That's his version of Jungle Boy. True. Where he, you know, takes horrifying bumps. And you're like, oh no, please, Darby, don't, no. And you're on his side. Cage, this whole match was vintage textbook Mr. Get My Shit In.
Yeah.
Because he had so many moves that he just flinging the poor guy around the ring, and he just looked amazing. So that even though he loses, you're like, no, he's still... I would still be horrified to be in an elevator with him.
Because he gets himself still... over for sure.
And he took some nice bumps of his own. When he was trying to use the steps, and he got like bumped, like knocked down onto it, and then coffin dropped.
You imagine being Darby Allin and going like, yeah, okay, I'm just gonna throw myself 10 feet without looking towards these steel steps which could legitimately crack my skull open and send me to the friggin' hospital, and just like, yeah, okay, I mean, I'm just gonna trust that it's gonna happen.
You have to, like, you truly have to have like that trust, and as Brian Cage, You have to be there for him. You have to
a big slab of meat just break his fall.
You really have to be there to handle that because he's not gonna know. So this match was a lot of stuff like that, and it felt like a very big match. It felt like a big deal. It was great.
There was a moment when Starks tried to help, and then Sting shows up, and there was no snow at first. And then Sting does a move, and Starks does this amazing fall off of like the stage. It's like he rolled like so many. He rolled like 3 feet and then fell off the stage. It was great. I thought that was funny. And then
Let's give it up for his facials.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
His facials during the match. I mean, there's physical selling and then there's just facial selling.
Yeah.
And he's putting over the match by being over on ringside, just like, what?
Yeah. Like Starks had some great faces.
He's my favorite.
He's wonderful.
He's just my favorite.
And like, this was like testament to his range of abilities because he does not get on mic. And he does not do like a lot. He doesn't do like any real serious like action.
I mean,
he just faces.
He's a superstar. He's a fucking superstar. He can do nothing wrong. He adds to everything every minute he's on stage, every minute he's on film, every minute he's in the ring.
And
he's like fucking fantastic.
And it was like at one point. I wasn't sure of why this was like, and I was wondering if they were trying to cover up why Hobbs couldn't be there, because like Taz is like, and we could only have two guys ringside. And I was like, I wonder why that is. He's not in town or he's sick or who knows what. But like also like it would have been plausible to me that they would have chosen Starks over Hobbs because Starks is just so invaluable, like in that area.
Hobbs does show up at the end to stand with the team because Sting had shown up, you know, and then after you know, Team Taz is up on the back of the stage, and Sting and Darby Allin are in the ring. Then there's snow. Then there's lots of snow, copious amounts of snow.
Too much, if anything.
I mean, it could even have been real snow, too, because, you know, it snowed in Mississippi this week.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's got to be a sign of something awful.
I know. I was like, oh, hell is probably frozen also. That makes sense. That's the next step with global warming. But it was a thumbs up. I'm assuming everyone thumbs that one up.
Yeah.
No question. Yeah, I think that's... No question.
Yeah. You know what's something that is funny about what can work in wrestling is the Darby's like a middle finger, like at one point in this match, apropos of nothing particular at this moment, but it was one of those things where like outside of that, a middle finger could seem actually like cheesy, but in this you're like, oh shit, you gave him the business. But yeah, the point is, like, it was an outstanding main event.
That is an 85% show.
Ooh,
wow.
That is definitely a must watch. Yeah, just real great stuff all the way through it. Yeah. Watch it.
Yeah, there were very few points that were anything resembling low. How many downs did we get? Did we get any?
I didn't give any.
I didn't give one.
I don't think there were any straight up no thumbs.
Yeah, like we had we did unite on a middle, and that might have been as low as it got.
Indeed. That tell you what, that Britt Baker, she's divisive.
Mm-hmm.
Divisive.
She is.
Possibly the most divisive person in all of America. I think we can all agree, yes? What,
do you think you get there's to take a quarter no. out for that?
Yeah. You know, my brain, yeah, it's gone.